about here. So what we're starting today is we're looking at social justice. And so we're gonna explore kind of the notion of social justice, Christian social justice, and how other religions come at social justice. All right. So I'm not really sure how long this is gonna take, but it'll take how long it takes. Before we start talking about justice and social justice, we need to define three key terms.
Right.
Okay? Because there are three terms we're going to use a lot in this conversation, and it's really important that we have an understanding of them. And the three terms are equality, equity, and justice. Right? And in our normal discourse, we do tend to use these terms interchangeably, sort of, but they don't really mean the same thing. All right? So equality means everyone gets the same. So if we're distributing something, everybody gets exactly the same amount. All right? That's equality.
And that's equal rights, too?
Equal rights, goods, services, rights.
Okay.
Equal. Everybody gets the same.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Equity is different. Equity means everyone gets what they need. And generally, the trail is to reach a certain level. That's not necessarily part of the definition, but as we use it, particularly in terms of distributing goods, everybody gets what they need. So, for example, if we were going to say we want everyone to have a basic minimum income, then we would give people whatever they needed to get to that level,
mm-hmm.
right? So I'm going to use, you all have been parents, and so you know, you've heard kids say, it's not fair, I didn't get the same thing she did. Mm-hmm. Well, maybe that's true, but maybe, you know, what my parents always said was, it's not about the same, it's about what you need,
mm-hmm.
right? You know, yes, we gave your sister more money, she's going on a theater trip to New York, we drove you every week to gymnastics, or every day to gymnastics at 5 o'clock in the morning, you know.
I can remember a comments like that from mm-hmm. my children.
Right.
It's interesting, it still persists. My adult son, stepson, we were doing a family Christmas present to buy a computer for one grandchild this year, and he commented about, well, you know, what about all the other grandchildren, isn't it? And he doesn't mm-hmm. have any kids, so he's
right.
trying to be fair to everybody. He said, but
right.
this is one-time deal. He needs it for school, and
right.
all coming
right.
in, and yada, yada, yada. Mm-hmm. So even an adult
right.
is
right.
saying, that's mm-hmm. not fair.
That's not fair.
Yeah.
So those two things, equality and equity, don't mean the same thing. And, you know, if you want to see the distinction, all you have to do is look at our two partner schools, right? Both schools are providing a free public education. When I go across the street here, I am the fourth adult helping in a first grade classroom of kids who came into school speaking English with concepts of print, most of them reading by the time they hit kindergarten. When I go down to school six, we're the only adult helpers that the kindergarten teacher with 21 kindergartners who speak five languages has. They're getting in terms of equality, they're getting a free public education. In terms of equity,
they're not getting what they need.
They're not getting what they need, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's those two concepts and the tension between them will be the root of a lot of the conversations about social justice. Because a lot of people, you know, say, well, to be fair, everybody should get the same. But from the equity point of view, to be fair, everybody should get what they need. And that may not be the same.
Mm-hmm. They should all be born in the same circumstances.
Right. So those two things are in tension.
Hmm.
And it's not that either is wrong. It's that they're different perspectives. And where you you talk, one of the things you'll talk to about that is the distinction between equality of outcome, equality of opportunity, and equality of input. Okay? Those three things are very different. Equality of input is, I'm going to give everybody the same thing. Equality of opportunity bears on the equity thing. I'm going to get everybody to the same place to start. And if that means you need six of whatever and you need three and you need one, then that's what you're going to get so that we're all at the same place.
And then it kind of spills over to what will you do with the getting to
right.
that same place. Now it's not a matter of equality and equity.
Right.
It's a matter of your own
right.
ability to take that and run with
take
it.
Take that and run with it. So and willingness to take
that's,
it and run with
that's
it.
What?
Equality that's equality of equality of input.
Outcome?
Equality of opportunity.
Opportunity.
And then equality of outcome is everybody should end up the same. And so if you don't end up the same, then there's... almost nobody holds a pure equality of outcome standard as fairness. But a lot of people will talk about disparate outcomes. So if you see groups that have radically different outcomes when you control for starting point, mm-hmm. then you want to ask the question. And so I read a lot of education studies because that's what we do here. And one of the really important sets of studies are the ones that control for income, parents' education, and reading level at entry, control for those and then find disparate outcomes among the races. And so you say, okay, well, if we've controlled for the things that usually impact educational outcomes and we're still seeing racial disparity, then we want to look at why. Because we've controlled for the input things, why is the outcome different? What is it in the system? Is that making sense?
Yes.
Okay.
Good.
All right. That brings us to justice. Justice might have to do with equality, it might have to do with equity, and it might have to do with equality of any of the kinds of equality, right? The Christian views of justice is based on Greek philosophy, particularly Aristotle. You'll be stunned to hear that, I know. You have never heard me say before that the Christian worldview is based on Aristotle. But yes, it is indeed based on Aristotle. And that is the Western sense of justice. It's not just particularly Christian, but the Western sense of justice. And so we talk about two different kinds of justice. Actually, talk about a lot of different kinds of justice, but two basic kinds is general or legal justice. So justice of everybody being treated fairly. And that's the type of justice we usually mean when we talk about it. Yeah. So everyone is entitled to justice. It's the general or legal justice we're talking to. There is also the sense of particular justice, which is individualized, and is really closely connected to the concept of righteousness. So that justice, it's really kind of that sense of Jesus' teaching that the measure you give will be the measure you get. So particular justice is more about you get what you deserve based on how you've lived your life. So there's the general justice of the kind of blindfolded lady of it doesn't really matter how you've lived your life, we're going to deal with the particular case we're dealing with, versus particular justice of we're going to look at the whole circumstance of how you've dealt and deal you back to that.
That's Christian?
It's Christian and Greek and Western. all of the above. So when we talk about particular justice, the justice due to the individual, that's really divided into two kind of focuses. And these are probably words you haven't heard. Commutative justice and distributive justice. All right? Commutative justice focuses on the relationships of members of society and consensual contracts. So when we talk about commutative justice, think about community. Commutative, community. This is the justice that's about relationships. How do we behave to one another? How do we treat one another? What standard do we hold those things? And also, this is also about contracts, you know, consensual contracts. Almost all Western justice says there is no such thing as a just non-consensual contract. So if I'm going to go into dealings with Linda and we mutually consent, what are the things that make that agreement just to both sides? Is a part of commutative justice. Distributive justice focuses on the distribution of benefits. For example, honors, wealth, those kinds of things, but also burdens, so taxation, labor for the good of the community. Military service might be a piece of those. So commutative justice is about the justice among our relationships. Distributive justice is about the distribution of benefits and burdens. Okay? Does that distinction make sense? Mm-hmm. Okay. And when we talk about distributive justice, a lot of people want to talk about the community's distribution of goods. People really don't like to talk about the distribution of burdens. But you know, you talk about things like tax policy. Do we do a flat tax? Well, flat taxes disproportionately impact people with lesser income. So do we talk about a complex tax system, and then what do we benefit? One of the things about military service, particularly when you have conscripted military service, what are the rules? Whose children serve?
What sex, too.
That's right. You know, and if you look at our volunteer army, the kids who volunteer are much more likely to be from those communities where there are no other choices. Mm-hmm. So is it really a just distribution of the burden of military service? Or is Israel a more just burden of military service where everybody serves mm-hmm. for a set amount of time? So those are the kinds of conversations you have when you talk about distributive justice. How are the burdens of society distributed? How are the benefits of society distributed? Okay. Have I lost you all yet?
No.
Okay, good.
I don't know if I'm going to remember all that.
Well, that's why I had to do my homework. I had to remind myself of some of these things. So now, when we turn to the concept of social justice is both a religious concept. Basically, every religion has a concept or a theology about social justice, but also it's a political concept. And almost every political system has a concept of social justice. And while the two religious and political concepts of social justice overlap, they're not necessarily identical. Okay? But basically, social justice is a focus on the common good of a community, including the distribution of benefits and burdens and the respect for rights. So when we talk about we as a church are going to focus on social justice, that's what we mean. We're going to look at our community and see how our community is distributing the benefits and burdens of our society and how we are respecting the rights of others. And is it in line with the teachings of God as we understand them. So when you talk about religious social justice, the plumb line of whether there are things that we need to work on to make our society more just tends to be the teachings of the particular religion. So Christian social justice has a particular flavor, and it actually has a couple of particular flavors depending on whether you're conservative evangelical Christians, progressive Christians, the plumb lines are different. Jewish social justice is also has a progressive sense and a conservative sense. Islamic social justice really is much more straightforward. There's really an agreed upon, pretty much, sense of what social justice looks like in Islam. And I'll talk about that when we get there. Hindu social justice is a little different because of the way that they view the role of the afterlife and the reincarnation.
Mm-hmm.
So they come at it slightly differently. Buddhist and Sikh social justice are very similar and very strict. And almost nobody lives up completely to the Buddhist and Sikh ideas. Well, almost nobody lives up to any religion's ideals, sure. but Buddhism and Sikhism are particularly, there is no bend in the plumb line. But all of those religious concepts of social justice adapt to a greater or lesser extent to the political sense of social justice in the community where they find themselves. So, American social justice, which is based on our founding documents that say all men are created equal, and while we haven't always lived up to that, that sense of democracy and equal input and equal, all men are created equal, but also individual freedom, gives social justice a different take than Russian social justice, which is even before communism became Russian, the Russian society was very commutarian. In other words, we're all in this together, although the Tsar is more equal than others. Is very different from the Indian concept of social justice, which comes out of caste-based Hinduism, which is very different than the social justice you find in Tibet, or in China, or in Japan. All right? So, justice is one of those words that we like to use as an absolute. And part of the reason I've made us read the Christ and Culture, but also that I showed you some of the James Burke stuff, is that what is absolute in a certain society at a certain time looks different if you move it out of that society or out of that time. So while we like to think about justice as an absolute, we need to be aware that that is perception rather than reality.
It's socially embedded.
That's right. That's right. The concept of justice is embedded in the society. And so you can pull it out and look at it. But it's very difficult to do that with your own society because you're embedded in your society too. And so the things we take for granted are the things we take for granted, and we don't always pay attention to them. One of the other concepts that we'll talk about when we talk about social justice, and I won't do much of it today, but I do want to name the term so that when I talk about it later, it's a term you've heard before, is the concept of privilege. And we hear it, you hear it, white privilege, male privilege, in our society, cisgender privilege. There are things that you both get and don't have to deal with if you're part of the majority. All right. So in American culture, everybody who's white, whether they're rich or poor, has benefits from white privilege because we're white. We get assumptions made about us and things that we don't have to deal with and things that we do have to deal with because we're white, wherever we fall. It's not saying that every white person has an easy life. That's not true. But two people at the same, who start at the same economic level, the person who is a part of the majority group is privileged. The same thing is true in our society if you're a man. Men get privileged in our society. And we all know that because we are part of the group that is not privileged. Again, it doesn't mean that every man has an easy life and every woman really has to struggle, but it means that things that women have to consider, men can think about if they choose to, right? Mm-hmm. In our society, one of the things that we talk about is cisgender, which is, I'm a woman who presents as a woman, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm heterosexual. So that all goes into that concept, and it's spelled CIS, if you've never encountered the term.
Mm-hmm.
What it refers to is, it's both heterosexuality, but also presenting as the gender that you were born. Mm. So I am a woman who was born a woman, who presents myself as a woman, who fits regular sexual roles. All right, I'm not homosexual. I'm not transgendered. I don't have any of those things to deal with. So because of that, because I fit society norm, I have a privilege because of that. I don't have to keep explaining myself, right? Whereas if I were homosexual or transgender or, somewhere along the spectrum. The other one that gets used in America a lot and in Western society is, that you will sometimes hear is neurotypical, which means that I process the world the way the majority of people process the world. I'm not on the autism spectrum. I don't have sensory. I don't have sensory issues where things feel or sound I perceive things differently. And it covers those things as well as sight and hearing deficits and those kinds of things. Right. And again, I'm privileged. The privilege is I don't have to think about how I'm going to cope with getting through my day in terms of inputs coming into me because the world is designed for the inputs to come into me in a way that I deal with them. All right? Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
And this is the concept that will start a lot of fights.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that's really common on Facebook right now is, and it's particularly white men, but some white women too, being told to check your privilege. You know, you make a comment about a news story or something, mm-hmm. and people say, hey, check your privilege.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're making an assumption out of your privileged position that people who aren't, who don't have that position can't make.
So, they make some negative comment about a protected class of people, mm-hmm. and someone says, you're just doing that out of your sense of privilege.
Right, or more benignly, you know, oh, well, I don't see a big deal in this particular law, or in this particular, I don't understand why that's a big deal. Check your privilege.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, for example, the random traffic stops where they're checking for
your driver's license, whatever.
Right, ever. What they're really checking is, are you driving drunk?
Right.
I don't think it's a big deal. It's annoying, but whatever. check your privilege, because they're going to look at you and see a white woman. They're going to make sure, you know, your driver's license is okay. They're not going to smell alcohol. They're going to let you go. It's not a big deal. If you're a black man, it's a different encounter. So that's what it means, is your response to that is, you know. And it's a really great way to start fights on Facebook, if you want to. If that's what you're into.
Yeah, well.
All right. The other phrase I want to throw in here, or word I want to throw in here, which is not equality and is not equity and is not justice and is not social justice and is not privilege, but also gets rolled into these discussions, is egalitarianism. And that might be a word you've heard before.
Yes.
And basically what it means is the sense that we want to operate out of the best that we can. So we want to bring our best. We want our society to be the best it can be. We want the common good to be the best it can be. We want our society to be as equal or as equitable as it can be. That's what egalitarianism means, is working towards making your society the best you can be. But the reason I wanted to have the conversation about privilege is that really colors the definition of, well, what is the best that the society can be? And egalitarianism can have a religious motivation behind it, or it can just have a, well, if everybody in the society is doing well, then that's better for everyone. Sense that's not connected particularly to a faith. So, all right, let me stop there and see if there are questions or comments or things you want to explore. More deeply.
Well, I like to think in terms of examples.
Okay.
So, I don't know what this has to do with anything, but I'm reading a mystery about that takes place in Iceland. The writer is Icelandic, and there was a murder, and this shocked me to see this. They said, well, we don't have a lot of murders in Iceland, and if we do, they find the person right away, and it's not a big deal. So that just shocked me, because it's so different from our society.
And that might have a lot to do... Crime rates have a lot to do with lots of different things. But one of the things that's true about Iceland is that it's a relatively small population.
Right.
But also it's a very homogeneous
society. Yeah, I was going to say, everybody's the same, practically.
Right. There's not a lot of diversity. So people tend to operate out of the same set of values, and it's easier to spot deviations from the norm.
It might be more of a commitment to protect the community because we are one.
So is that egalitarianism?
Somewhat.
Yeah.
The other piece about Icelandic culture is that, think about a world where until really, really recently, for lots of the year, the only way you survived is if you relied on each other. Because Iceland is a really harsh climate. Less so now that we have, like, central heating and electric light. But as the society developed, mutual dependence was not just a nice thing to have, it was survival. So their culture and their society, looking out for one another, is a much higher value.
They might not even discuss egalitarianism and social justice, because it is. It just is. It's how we live. It's how we survive. Interesting.
Yeah. One of the challenges to Iceland at the moment is they're beginning to get immigrants, both economic refugees and actual refugees, and immigrants, you know, people who want to move to Iceland because...
That's not part of their history.
Right. And they've never, nobody's ever wanted to move to Iceland by choice. Mm-hmm. You know.
They certainly want to visit it now.
Yes.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm.
So, so they're beginning to have to struggle as a society with, well, now wait. This is a culture that didn't have last names until after World War II. Because there was not a large enough population to need last names.
Well, all the last names are so-and-so's daughter.
Son and so-and-so's son, yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they were assigned. I mean, you didn't, like, literally, before World War II, they might have called you, oh, you know, Ingrid. Yeah, you know Ingrid Smith's, you know, Sven's daughter.
Mm-hmm.
But...
Or the baker's daughter.
The baker's daughter,
whatever.
Or, yeah. But they didn't have a last name until in living memory. So,
that's incredible.
So, and that's, you know, the thing about justice in society is, what is justice in a society that's small enough that you don't have to have last names, where everybody... shares a common set of values, versus what is justice in a nation like ours, where one of our primary values is we're people from everywhere coming here. And so what's the norm?
Mm-hmm.
The range of what the norm is,
it's pretty wide.
Is pretty wide.
You know, I had Japanese students for a long time, and the Japanese students always said, it's hard for us in class because if you correct one Japanese student, mm-hmm. you're correcting the whole group.
Mm-hmm.
That's so different from
mm-hmm.
the American
mm-hmm.
thing, which is, you know, we do our own thing, we mm-hmm. achieve on our own, mm-hmm. that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another example of mm-hmm. what the way culture really affects mm-hmm. the way you look at yourself.
And what do you value? Do you value individual freedom and autonomy?
Mm-hmm.
Or do you value... communitarianism? Do you value being part of the community? And those are two ends of the spectrum.
Absolutely.
Where do you fall? You know, we say in America, well, we value individual liberty, and we do, but it's not our only value. We value being part of a community. That's why we have laws.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And that's, if you look at the two political parties, part of the reason that they approach the world differently is that the Republican Party, ideally, I mean, in their ideal documents, values individual rights and individual freedoms and believes that the less regulation on the individual, the better. The Democratic Party falls somewhat at the other end of the spectrum and says there are regulations and things that we need to do for the common good that we need to all... be a part of, and the government is the best distributor of some of those goods. And so that's the root of the political tension between the two parties, is the individual good, the individual freedom, or the group freedom? Where does it go? That's one of the spectrums of justice, is it just to give everybody as much freedom as possible? Is it just to give everybody as much benefit from the society as possible? And where between those two do you fall? Because we can give everybody equal benefits of the society, but in order to do that, you have to confiscate everything from the individual. Right?
Mm-hmm. Only if they're American, though. We don't give equal benefits to non-Americans.
Well, yes. But if we were designing a society from scratch, right? In this room, we're put in charge of the world, and we're going to design the society from scratch. We could say, in our perfect society, everybody gets the same thing. But the only way to ensure on an ongoing basis that everybody gets the same thing is that you take everything from everybody and then redistribute it so that everybody gets the same thing. is perfectly equal. Is it just?
Well, like, it does away with individual achievement. Mm-hmm. So that's hard for Americans to grasp. Mm-hmm.
And so the work that you do is for the benefit of the community, not yourself. Is that just? Well, it depends on what you value, right? There are a lot of people who would say, yes, that's absolutely just, that everyone should contribute for the good of the whole and you should be happy to do it. There are a lot of other people who would say, well, no. Individuals who excel, either because of effort or ability, or both, should be able to enjoy some benefit for excelling. So where do you stop? Where's the balance point that makes it just?
And most of those discussions don't account for inability.
That's right.
True, valid inability.
That's right.
Not lack of motivation, but inability.
Mm-hmm.
The things
that's
that
right.
you were talking about.
Right, exactly.
My eyesight, my
right.
ability to walk, my ability to talk,
right.
think.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And it's really based on what you put into it, and all those people can't put into it, therefore they're...
And so then how do we as a just society...
Care for them.
Care for them. Or account for that.
And then you start saying, well, if all things are equal, we care about your input. But all things are not
equal.
That's
right.
Not only the things that are being judged or whatever, but mm-hmm. personal biases.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way to measure
mm-hmm.
that, and yet they're important with the way people deal with one another.
Mm-hmm.
And you can never measure that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's in practice all the
mm-hmm.
time.
Implicit bias is a thing. If you've never done it, when you go home, Google... Harvard implicit bias test. I don't remember the URL, but Harvard University has up an implicit bias test on the computer. And the way it works is it asks you to select a word that matches an image. And so like it'll have a positive word and a negative word, and it'll flash images on the screen and ask you to select, and it accounts for handedness. It has you do the test first with the good word on your right hand and the bad word on your left hand, and then flips it. Because a lot of us are right-handed, and we'll default to the right.
Really?
Yeah.
Jeez.
So it accounts for that. It's really very insightful. You would be surprised.
Thank you for that.
Yeah. I mean, we'll talk about implicit bias. I might even pull that up at some point and let you do it here. But it's really, implicit bias is one of those things that we would all say, oh, no, I'm not biased. And then we discover that, well, we live in the world, so of course we're biased.
Help but be
yeah.
biased.
Yeah. And all you can really do about implicit bias is become aware of your own biases and work to, you know, stay aware of them as you're making decisions.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a lot of education in mm-hmm. being aware of your attitudes toward black people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's
mm-hmm.
actually quite shocking, mm-hmm. even though, you know, you think we're educated, we're aware,
mm-hmm.
but
mm-hmm.
it's a very hard series of lessons.
It's very hard. You know, the other day, we had him for the day, and we were having some work done in our house, and one of the men was black. And Seth is six, so the man came up through the house and went outside, and Seth leaned over to me and whispered, brown skin.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so he knew to not mm-hmm. say it out loud.
Mm-hmm.
He knew the difference,
mm-hmm.
okay, but he wasn't like, brown skin. He was just pointing out black in a whisper.
Yes, because he's been taught.
Something.
Yeah.
Something. At age six, I would say, well, we haven't biased that child, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We're not a biased family.
Right.
But.
Why
did he lean over and whisper?
Mm-hmm.
He didn't say anything to me about the other man who was
mm-hmm.
white and
mm-hmm.
older and, you know, it's just,
mm-hmm.
it's there.
Interesting.
It's just there.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Because of the world we live in. You know, pick us up and drop us down in, Ethiopia, and
pale and ugly.
Yes, you know, and that's why I, you know, when I was talking about privilege, you know, well, colonialism has impacted privileges in Africa, but certainly, for example, in China, privilege works differently because of what, because of that society and what that society values. All right. One last thing I want to do today, and then I'll stop, I promise. But when we discuss justice generally, there are four senses that we want to explore. And I'm going to use the term moral agency. All right? And that's not a word that gets thrown around in usual conversation. When we talk about individual agency, that's our ability and our right to make decisions for ourselves. All right? When we talk about moral agency, we're talking about our ability and willingness to act as from a moral basis. All right? So, the four senses of justice that we will explore is a norm for human moral agency that has its source in the being and agency of God. Okay? So what is our ability to act morally, and how is that connected to the being of God and the ability of God to act? Okay? So that's part one. Part two is, what is the virtue of moral agency? What sort of virtue does my moral agency hold, and is surrendering it the greatest virtue? Surrendering my own moral agency to another, whether the other is God or the state or the philosopher king, right? We're going to explore what is a norm for governing human relationships that compares and contrasts with the standard of love of neighbor. So what would be the norm of governing our human relationships, and how does that look in comparison to the command of God to love our neighbor? All right? And then the last is the normative ordering of social benefits and burdens among members of a commonwealth. All right? We're all part of a commonwealth, whether we call it that or not. What is the normative ordering and distribution of social benefits and burdens? How do we distribute the benefits of the society, and how do we distribute the burden of the society? And why do we do it that way? And how else might we do it? Okay? So as we move through these conversations, we're going to keep coming back to those. So, okay, so what does that say about individual moral agency? What does that say about the norm for governing our human relationships, but how does that compare to love of neighbor? What would that tell us about how we would distribute the goods of our society? What are the goods of our society? How do we distribute the burdens of our society? What are the burdens of our society? You're probably beginning to get the sense that this is not going to be a straightforward social justice is this.
Well, I'm just constantly wondering, you know, where does the Christian view fit into all this? Too, and you said you're going to talk about other religions.
Right. And,
too,
and
so.
You obviously see that this is coming at it from a Christian perspective, right? Because not every religion says that love of neighbor is the highest value. Not every religion says that God has a moral agency. That's very Abrahamic. Mm-hmm. Hindus, Buddhists, and Sikhs would tell you God doesn't have moral agency.
It's divorced from the world as we live in.
That's right. That the divine does not act in moral ways in our world. So, we act in moral ways in our world, the Hindu, Buddhist, Sikh, Shinto would say. But God doesn't act in moral ways in our world. It's only Christians, Jews, and Muslims who really believe that God acts in the day-to-day lives of human beings in a moral way. So, that's, you know, that sense that God might impact the doings of our world already puts us in. And it's certainly an Abrahamic faith perspective. So, yes.
Well,
To long way around to get to yes, but yes. So that's where we're going to stop. I have given you, I think, enough foundation for you to go home and go,
Yes.
I'm going to put this up on the podcast. It'll be up today. So if you want to go back and listen again, you can do that. And we are not meeting next week because I will already be in Ohio.
Excellent.
So we'll pick up the Sunday or the Wednesday after Thanksgiving.
So with the podcasts, are they all on there always or what? Is just the recent ones?
Just the recent ones. I haven't gone back and translated the old ones into the podcast. I started kind of halfway through the Christ and Culture.
Right, I remember.
Yeah.
So all those podcasts?
Those podcasts are up on the podcast site.
Okay.
And this one will be. Eventually, I will go back and pull some of the others up to that, but not right now. After Christmas, maybe. I'll play with that. But going forward, they all will be, because it's just, I think it's easier, because you can just click on the podcast link, and it plays on whatever device you want it to play.
Mm-hmm. No, it's great.
Yeah.
It's great, because it works for everybody.
Right. Yeah. And also, I have some people following the podcast who I don't know who they are. So that's, you know. And since I haven't put it on iTunes yet, I'm surprised at that. Hey.
Just catch me up on this.
Yes.
We did Niebuhr's Christ and Culture.
Right.
And then you did some other work.
Well, what we did...
You brought us to the topic of social justice, which you're starting to do.
Right, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
What we did after Niebuhr's Christ and Culture, and if you want to follow up on this, you can Google it and find the videos. I showed two videos from James Burke's The Day the Universe Changed.
Okay.
Series. I showed the last one, which is episode 10, and episode 4, which is focused on the invention of printing. And the reason I showed those two videos was because of the way that he approaches demonstrating how the way we view the world changes over time.
Mm-hmm.
It just was a way to kind of give everybody a framework of, no, we really don't live in, the world isn't unchanging, you know, and what we think is right and wrong changes as we move through time, and the way that we perceive the world changes based on what we think we know. So that's what you missed.
Okay, I've missed quite a bit.
Yes.
You can Google those. They're not on YouTube, but they're on something else.
Okay.
So it's possible to find
them. It is possible.
We will get into the effect of, like, money and power versus poverty.
Yes. Because as we talk about distributive justice, money and power and wealth and poverty are inescapably linked to those things, because... not being angels, we don't live in perfect worlds. So we will talk about that, and we will talk about what, from the Christian perspective, as we perceive injustice, what is it that God calls on us to do, as individuals and as members of a society. So, and then... if we were Jewish, what would we? How would we see that? If we were Islamic, if we were Muslim, how would we see that? If we were Hindu, how would we see
that?
That's
great.
So.
That's great that you're going to talk about that.
Yeah.
I think.
And then once we finish with social justice, whenever it is that is, the next topic people have asked for is a synopsis, an overview of world religions. So
something really small.
So I will be working on preparing that while we do this.
How long do you envision staying with social justice?
I have no idea. It depends on how much you all want to, how deep you all want to go, and where we take it. I've got notes for about 6 weeks, but it might go shorter than that. It might go longer than that.
We want to understand why our world is doing such a terrible job at implementing social justice. That's what I want.
That's what you want to understand? Okay.
Oh, you're going to come up with answers, are you?
No. We've known each other quite a while. I rarely will give you an answer. But we can talk about
Well, it's different frameworks.
Yeah.
People have different frameworks.
Right. And also, if we've come to a conclusion that we need to address imbalance and injustice in our society, how do we do that effectively in our society? Mm-hmm. Because that's a different, that is another societally dependent question. How do you effectively address injustice? There's lots of ways to address injustice. What's effective?
Mm-hmm. And legal.
Well, sometimes what's effective is not legal.
Yeah.
For example, I mean, and I'll come back to this a lot because it's one that we all are reasonably familiar with. African American people sitting down at a lunch counter in Mississippi in 1950 or in 1960 was not legal. But it was a very effective way of addressing social justice. And so when we talk about moral agency, part of the moral agency and civil disobedience is accepting the consequence of violating an unjust law. Right? There's been a meme running around Facebook that I like because it's true, but it's as true as far as it goes. Those who hid Anne Frank were breaking the law. Those who turned her in were following the law. So while law is one measure of justice, it is not the only measure of justice. And how do we address unjust laws? And how do we address laws that only the minority of the society view as unjust?
Crossing the border to seek asylum, it's illegal unless you cross in the right places. If you cross in those places, you can seek asylum, but if you cross elsewhere, it's illegal. So how is that just? You know, there's an awful lot of questions that go into that.
And is, to what extent does ignorance of law change the definition of justice? You know, you've all heard the saying, ignorance of the law is no excuse. Except until we started printing, ignorance of the law was an absolute excuse.
Or at least a reality, whether people accept it as an excuse or not. It was a widespread reality and still would be.
So, you know, that's... And it's something that Americans get themselves into all the time. They travel overseas and break the law of one of the countries they're visiting, and then, well that's not fair.
Oh, I didn't know it was the law.
Yeah. It's like, well, okay, but you're in their country and, you know, their laws, not, you know. So, all right, that's a good place to stop, I think.